this week. Thanks for joining us, folks. We have a treat that I've been waiting for a long time, folks. I have with us today Professor Elaine Pagels. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning. Very good to be here.
So, folks, many of you have heard of the Gnostic Gospels. The book, The Gnostic Gospels, won so many awards, really a major piece of the 20th century. And Dr. Pagels is one of the profound, most profound authorities in the world, on the planet, relating to the ancient texts, secret texts, the beginning of our Bible. So, just at first, Elaine, would you please tell the audience some of your background? They can get a sense, because you can tell them in a capsule better than I, your background. You are, for what, 30 years now, one of these eminent authorities on this? Tell us where you come
from.
Well,
I grew up in California in a not particularly religious Protestant family, and I was told that religion was becoming obsolete. And yet I found myself absolutely fascinated by it for reasons my parents thought were rather odd. And at a certain point became involved with an evangelical church because it had a certain kind of passion, which most Christianity didn't.
At what age?
Of 14. I fell in love with it, and I fell out of love with it. And there's a little story about that in here. Because they said that a friend of mine who was Jewish was going to go to hell. You know, and I just suddenly thought, well, I don't know. This is not a place I can stay. I couldn't remain in that group. So I decided to explore what it was about Christianity, what it was about religion that was so extraordinarily powerful. And I went off to graduate school to try to find out what happened in the early Christian movement. It's as though you want to go and listen in on what, you know, Jesus talking to his disciples. And what I discovered, and I thought I would find some sort of simpler, purer, sort of, what really happened? What was the teaching way back then when it was all simple? And instead, I found out that my professors had file cabinets full of Gospels that I'd never heard of. They had the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Truth. All of this had been discovered in 1945 in Upper Egypt, and it was discovered quite accidentally by an Arab villager who was digging for fertilizer and found a jar full of ancient Christian texts. So that was great. I mean, instead of finding a simpler, pure early Christianity, we all found a much more complicated picture, much more complicated than it had ever been. You know, many more Gospels and many more views of Jesus. So that's what I love doing.
So, folks, I want to let you know, first, the book we're talking about today, the occasion for Professor Pagels to come to town, is called Beyond Belief, subtitle, The Secret Gospel of Thomas. Of course, folks, Professor Pagels is the lead professor at the Princeton University in New Jersey, and it's just the accolades go on and on, all the various accolades. I'm sorry, we're not going to take the time of the show to go into this. Folks, she is the authority on this ancient biblical factual issues, and we have a treat here. So perhaps we should start with, this is delicate, I realize it's a little bit delicate, and folks, the audience, many of them have been with me a long, long time. It's delicate to probe into this for many people. The Bible, the actual printed volume we call the Bible. Tell us, please, how this came about. See, it's just so delicate that people consider that this exact limited piece of print is something that's solely and only the holy conveyance of God. And I hear from a historian and a scholar like you, it was just a selection from things. So please give us some history about this actual Bible, because it's so valid for our folks to know.
Yes, I mean, you know, we talk about the Bible, but actually it's a collection of very different writings written over 1,000 years. And what we call the New Testament is not a book. It's a collection of many little books or pamphlets, 27 of them. And the earliest it was put together is about 350 years after the death of Jesus.
350 years? That's like 3.5 centuries.
That's right. Can you imagine that there was a Christian movement for over 300 years before there was a New Testament, before there was a creed? And there were many different writings and many different teachings attributed to Jesus.
When you say creed, what's the expanded version of what you mean by creed?
Well, I was thinking of the creed that was developed in the year 325. It's one that Catholics and many Protestants use. It starts out, I believe in one God, Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and so forth. And it's about Jesus, his only son, our Lord. So that kind of, the idea of Christianity as a statement of you have to believe these things and you have to accept these books, both of those are formulated in the 4th century. So I'm saying, wait a minute, there's 300 years.
Who had the authority to do this?
That's a really good question. Most of the process is anonymous. We do know that there were some leaders of the churches in earlier centuries who selected certain texts. For example, one of the my favorites is a bishop who lived in what is now France. His name is Irenaeus. And he said, well, we know there are many gospels, but really the heretics are the people who say they have more gospels than there really are. There can't be more than 4 gospels, and there can't be fewer. And if you asked him why not, he'd say, well, because there are 4 corners of the universe and there are 4 winds, so therefore there can only be 4 gospels.
True story?
True story.
That's
simple. And he also says, and furthermore, only these are written by the disciples of Jesus and his disciples. Well, we know this isn't the case because the ones that were found in Upper Egypt, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Peter, are also attributed to the same people. And most New Testament scholars would not think that we actually know who wrote the ones in the New Testament. So what you see...
Truly? What
yeah,
you just said?
Yeah.
They really don't believe we in fact know that it's John, Matthew, Mark, Luke?
If you read any commentary, usually they don't. They could say, well, the tradition says this. Now, for example, it need not... If something says the gospel according to Matthew, it doesn't necessarily mean that Matthew wrote it. It meant that you could be a disciple of Matthew. And you'd say, this is the gospel according to Matthew, my teacher. So there are different collections of the teachings of Jesus. And now we have more of them, some of which were declared by Bishop Irenaeus in the 2nd century to be heretical. He said there can only be 4, and those are the ones we call Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And all the others, he said, are illegitimate secret gospels. One thing you find among the ones that were found in Upper Egypt, and by the way, they were found in a Christian monastery. They were treasured by the monks. They were copied and revered and put in the monastery library. Those usually claim to be secret gospels. That is, the Gospel of, say, Matthew tells you what Jesus taught on the hills of Galilee to thousands of people. So does Luke. But the Gospel of John in the New Testament tells you things that Jesus said to certain disciples. And the Gospel of Thomas starts with the words, these are the secret sayings which the living Jesus spoke and which the twin Judas Thomas wrote down. So these are meant to be secret teachings. Now, good question is, did Jesus have those kinds of secret teachings? Well, the Gospel of Mark in chapter 4 says he did. It says, Jesus speaks to the disciples saying, to you is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but to those outside everything is in parables so that they won't understand.
Wow. So was there a concurrent record keeping in this monastery in Egypt that these same scriptures that were discovered with Nag Hammadi, so those did exist in parallel all the time? It wasn't that we waited till 1945 to find them. They were already in some monastery in Egypt as well, in a translated version.
They were all found, along with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, in the monastery, the oldest monastery in Egypt. As soon as it was illegal to be a Christian, and remember, for 300 years it was dangerous. You could be persecuted, arrested, and killed for being a Christian. But as soon as it was legal, the earliest monastery in Egypt had these books in it, the ones that were found in Upper Egypt, over 50 of them. And the Archbishop of Egypt was trying to establish his control over the monasteries because they were actually led by abbots, which means a father, right? But not by the bishop. And the bishop was trying to establish his control over these. And he wrote to the monks, he said, at Easter, he said, I want you to get rid of all those illegitimate secret books that you love so much. He said, because they're going to mislead you. Now, he said, 27 of them are the springs of salvation. And that is the first list of 27 books that we now call the New Testament, are the books that he said were all right to keep. And the books he told the monks to get rid of, someone disobeyed him and put them in a huge jar and hid them where they would be safe, buried them. And that's why they were found, you know, in 1945.
Wow, thank you. I've never known that sequence of history there.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
So what about then for listeners who have been so drilled, so indoctrinated with the concept that you have to accept comma by period by word, this document we call the Bible, as the ultimate, purest form of God's expression, how does someone like you that has such a wider view of what really took place with Jesus and his disciples, how do you mingle these two realities?
Well, the question it raises for me, I mean, some people say, well, wait a minute, these aren't the real Gospels, so they don't count, you know? And even some New Testament scholars have said that. But I think more and more today are beginning to realize that the real question is, how did we get these Gospels over here called the New Testament and these others called heresy? Now, some people, we thought when the Gospel of Thomas was first discovered that it was probably quite late. And, you know, there's a lot of later legendary writings that come out of the Middle Ages, you know, that have nothing to do with the early centuries. But in fact, many people now think the Gospel of Thomas is a very early source, as early as the ones in the New Testament, some people think even earlier.
Wow. Okay, so folks, that's a historical overview. Now, since today we're focusing what you brought out in your new book, Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas, tell us some about this gospel.
Well, what fascinated me was not only the idea of a secret gospel, but many of the sayings in it. It begins with the words, "Let the person who seeks not stop seeking till he finds. When he finds, he'll be troubled. When he's troubled, he'll be astonished." Right? And it's the living Jesus encouraging people to seek and to find. Now, much of the Gospel of Thomas will be familiar if you know the Gospels of Luke and Matthew, because many of the sayings are identical and probably drew on common traditions about the sayings of Jesus. There's the parable of the sower, the parable of the pearl of great price, parable of the fisherman, much that's already in Matthew and Luke. And there's a lot of other tradition that sounds a lot like the Gospel of John. Jesus says, "I am the light of the world," right? And speaks about the beginning of time, just as he does in the Gospel of John. So it's very deeply connected to well-known tradition about Jesus. But then there are some twists in it that take it in a very different direction.
Please, go on.
Well, the Gospels of the New Testament are really claiming to give you mostly the public teaching of Jesus and the basic teaching. And that is usually...
Public teaching?
Yeah, well, you know, Matthew says the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus taught to thousands of people while he was seated on a mountain like Moses. And Luke talks about the same sayings, the Sermon on the Plain, he calls it, where Jesus is talking to thousands. But these, and usually that is about the need for faith in God and faith in Jesus as a source of revelation and so forth. And that came to be taken in later tradition to mean, as it does in the Gospel of John, all you have to do is believe in Jesus and your sins will be forgiven and you'll be saved and you're fine. If you don't believe in him, then the wrath of God will abide upon you. But that's a different kind of problem. The Gospel of Thomas has
it is,
yes, it is. That believing in Jesus is the difference between heaven and hell. I mean, that's, you find some of that in Matthew and you find it in John.
I find it all around me.
Well, yes, we do. The Gospel of Thomas doesn't talk about that. It talks about seeking and finding. It talks about ignorance and it talks about awakening. And here Jesus speaks about not believing in somebody else, but not only that he comes forth from the divine source, from God, but the good news, the gospel, is so do you.
Ah.
That is, here, the two questions Christians argued about are, Who is Jesus and what is the good news? And John would say, well, Jesus is the divine light that shines in the world. And the good news is that he can save you from sin and darkness. The Gospel of Thomas says Jesus is the divine light. There's a beautiful passage I love in saying 77. Jesus says, "I am the light that is before all things. I am all things. All things come forth from me. All things return to me. Split a piece of wood, and I am there. Lift up a rock, and you will find me." So Jesus speaks as the divine source of light in the universe. But the good news is, and you too come from the same place. You too come from the divine source. So Jesus says to his disciples, if people say to you, "Where do you come from?" You know, you don't say Portland or California. You say, "We come from the light, the place where the light came into being in the beginning." And if they say, who are you? You say, we are children of the light, children of the living Father. And this indicates that you, like Jesus, are a child of God. And that's what you need to discover. It's not obvious, because none of us grows up with that perception.
Is it your sense that that there was an actual mystical practice, that people actually were in that, in those days, that they were actively attempting to experience this light, for this actual conscious light, a presence of God, presence of conscious being in the universe? Were they actually trying to have mystical experience in those days?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and that's why the monks love this kind of book, because it is about seeking and finding for yourself. It is about discovery within you. It's not about intellectual knowledge. It's about the knowledge of the heart.
Thank you.
It's about the knowledge of the heart. It's about insight, and it's about who are you? And the answer here is that you come from the divine source, and you have access to it if you look and struggle within yourself to find it.
I always wondered about baptism back in those days, because, you know, these days baptism is, it, for me, I've been baptized. I came from a Protestant Baptist tradition, and what I've, well, since I've learned more about mystical traditions, I speculate that baptism in those original days really had some mystical element to it, that there may have been some sort of an awakening or some sort of a transmission involved between the teacher and the disciples. What's your sense about that?
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, in the Gospel of Thomas, there are questions. Jesus tells you how to respond to the questions. Now, when you're baptized, you know, you're asked questions.
Oh, really?
You know, well, do you believe, in, you know?
Okay.
And anybody today who's, okay, who's baptized. And so it was then. So I think saying 37, no, saying 50 is instruction for a baptism. So that's when Jesus says, who are you? Where do you come from? And what is the, how do you, what are your, how do you validate your identity? This is something you might be asked if you're crossing from one country into another.
Very good.
Right?
Yes.
And this baptism is a transition. So who are you is not just your name and your place of birth and your identity papers, but that's the one in which Jesus says, when they say to you, who are you, say, we come from the light, the source where the light came into being in the beginning. And if they say to you, who are you, say, we're children of the living Father. And if they say to you, what is the evidence of your Father in you, say, movement and rest. And those are part of a baptism. You can see from saying 37, where the disciples say to Jesus, according to the Gospel of Thomas, how can we see you? How can we come to see who you are? And he says, when you take off your clothes without being ashamed and trample them under your feet like little children, then you will see the Son of the Living One without fear.
Oh,
and this is
beautiful.
An image of baptism, of going back to the state of Adam and Eve, when they were innocent, and rediscovering their connection with God.
So, first, I want to go back into a bit of the darkness with all of this. Is there a transition? Is there a little place of tension that people will have to traverse in order to really open their hearts and their minds to what's possible with Christianity? I mean, there seems to me that there's a heavy momentum going on around us that, If you're caught by it, you're really going to miss the core message of all this. Well, what's on the cautionary side, we're going to ask you about good news later. Now I want to ask you about the hazards. What is really the heartbreak for you in our culture today with how Christianity has its grip?
Well, I think part of it is that many people feel that asking questions or voicing any doubt is somehow subversive. I've been told by so many people, oh, well, I always wondered about that, but I was told not to ask that question.
I was actually invited out of Sunday school at the age of 8 for asking questions. And my family was very much involved in this Baptist church. I still continued to go.
Yes.
But I wasn't invited. I just had some real questions on my mind. They asked me to not attend.
Well, I think that is tremendously sad. That is, it requires the shutting off of the mind. In the Middle Ages, they called it the sacrifice of the intellect. It was considered a good thing to do. This text is not about that. It's about exploring, seeking, and finding. For example, in the Gospel of Matthew, the disciples say, teach us to pray. So what does Jesus say? When you pray, say, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. He gives them the words. And they say, well, do you want us to observe the kosher laws? And he says, you know, no, these don't matter, and so forth. And when, how should we give alms? And he says, well, when you do it, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Do it secretly. In the Gospel of Thomas, there's a completely different perspective. It's not that this is thought to be necessarily totally contradicting the other teaching, but it's an advanced level. So the disciples say to Jesus,
very good, advanced level.
Yeah, it's not that this is, you know, just weird, as my teacher used to say, or that this is Gnostic or peculiar or just odd, but this is considered a higher stage of understanding.
Fabulous.
So the disciples say to Jesus in saying six, well, do you want us to fast? How should we, what should we eat? What diet should we observe? How should we give alms? How should we pray? And on this advanced level, he doesn't tell them. He says, do not tell lies and do not do what you hate, for everything is known before God in heaven. Now, who knows when you're lying? Who knows what you hate? Right? You have to answer that question. And all through the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus refuses to answer the questions and keeps saying, no, you have to discover in yourself. You have to discover that. You have to explore, and the answers will come. And the reason they'll come is that you come from the divine source, and it's deeply hidden within you.
So it's a totally powerful affirmation of what every human being is, then, the divinity in every human being.
It is, and some people have thought it's some kind of aggrandizement, like, you know, you're God, some kind of cheap sort of, you know, megalomania. But it's really not that. It's about all beings coming from the same source, and therefore having that source as the very deepest level of their being. And it's about understanding who you are, not how you're different by your name, by your gender, by your background and your affiliations, but how you are in fact the same. That, I think, is a symbolic reason that they attribute the Gospel of Thomas to someone with your name, which means the twin. Because what you discover in the Gospel of Thomas, what the disciple is supposed to discover, is that at a deep level, you and Jesus can be, in a sense, twins. So Jesus says in saying 108 to Thomas, whoever drinks from my mouth, and that is, learns from me, will become like me. And I will become that person. And the mysteries will be revealed to him. This is light years away from the Gospel of John that says God had only one son. You have to believe in him or you die.
I love my name. I've never really had any kind of charge with my name my whole lifetime. And now, I really like my name. Thank you.
Thomas is the twin and the one who is given the secret teaching.
So, we have a few minutes left. And folks, you know, so that I don't need to interrupt Professor Pagels again, let me again say, the book we're talking about is Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas. I'm going to put you on the spot in a minute and ask you for the good news, and you're going to be able to finish the show telling us all good news. Is there a website? Is there a website or anything else that you'd like to give folks other than the book?
Well, they can look up the Gospel of Thomas on the web, and there are different translations. I mean, some of them are better than others. Oh, as I said, I put one in the back of this book because we're translating from Egyptian, a text originally written in Greek, and it's hard. So I put a translation in Beyond Belief.
Beautiful.
And you'll find other translations on the web if you look under Gospel of Thomas.
So, folks, this book's available everywhere. Beyond Belief, The Secret Gospel of Thomas. Of course, Dr. Elaine Pagels. So we've got a few minutes left, and actually a couple. And you've looked at Christianity way beyond what all of us have looked at Christianity. Give us the good news. Give us the heartwarming. I think you've already alluded to it a number of times during this show. But I want to finish the show with your uplift for what really is the beauty and the jewel about Christianity.
Well, what I love about this is that what we call Christianity isn't one thing. It isn't this or that tradition. It's not whether it's Baptist or Roman Catholic or Russian Orthodox or Seventh-day Adventist. It's an enormous 2,000 years of tradition with very wide open diversity and issues involved. And one can explore that very with a, and find in it, I think, a great deal of enormous value. You do, I think, have to pick and choose. And in the past, that was called heresy. Heresy means making choices.
Really? Literally?
Literally.
Huh.
And yet, and some leaders of the church thought that's very bad. But in fact, if you become a Christian today, if you're baptized, you make a choice. Are you going to be Baptist or Roman Catholic or Lutheran or whatever? So we all make choices. And this is an invitation to seek and find new things on a spiritual level.
Especially the divinity in every person. I mean, that, to me, that is the grandest thing you brought on my plate today, is Christ originally urged everyone. In fact, he says, you're not done until you get there, finding this divinity for ourselves.
That's right. I find that very powerful.
Folks, thanks so much for joining us today. And it's been my great pleasure to have Professor Elaine Pagels with us. And thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next Sunday morning.
Thank you. That was fun.
Wasn't that great? And, dear, I would like to ask you to join my fabulous library.
Absolutely.